weeks crafting the final look of the letter. That's why those letters are such a pain in the butt. Because I'm not just editing it to the point of good enough. I'm editing it to the point where it's going to impress them with the way it looks. And that means a lot of eye relief, and that means that the letter kind of has, each page kind of has like an hourglass shape. That's what you kind of want. You never want big blocks of gray copy, even in email. You want to break it all up. A good way to write right now, if you're a rookie, single sentence paragraph. And it can seem kind of jerky for a while, but what you're doing is you're spacing that thing out. You're airing it out. So you never come, so the reader doesn't come across a 15-line paragraph where he has to go, whew, well, if I'm going to, you just talked about bathroom breaks. If I'm going to take a break, I better do it now before I read this. And he puts it aside that day. You lost him. So you want to make each one, you want to use the bucket brigade, which is, so one sentence is, and here's why this is important to you, blah, 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 blah. Next paragraph is another sentence that may grammatically belong in that previous paragraph, but you're not doing it. You're spacing it down, and it says, what's more, blah, 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 blah. Then the next sentence is another paragraph. And not only that, blah, 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 you're using this stuff that makes him continue reading. So, the more eye relief, the better. Especially when you're a rookie, you will see that often my ads, because I use such long headlines sometimes, you got to be really good to use a long headline because there can't be a spare word in there. Those long headlines are long because there's no way to write it shorter. I'm not writing long copy because long copy magically works. I'm writing long copy because that's what it takes to get the sales pitch across. So I'm translating the sales pitch in my head from this imaginary conversation I'm having with the reader, and it just takes 8 to 12 to 20 pages or whatever to have that conversation. It's essentially like sending a salesman out to go knock on your door, and I'm not telling him, you got 150 words and you got to shut up no matter what. No, you say, just give the pitch. I don't care if it takes you 15 minutes or an hour and a half or whatever it takes. Find out what's going to happen. Now getting back to the idea of a list or something. Most door-to-door salesmen do have a list. They understand they have 15 things they got to go through with this guy. And if they cut that pitch short, they're going to risk losing the sale. If you're selling encyclopedias or something, they will give you a pitch to go down. And that's been a tested pitch that's been gone through for years with a fine-tooth comb. And trying to shortcut that pitch is going to cause you problems. This is answering another question you haven't asked me, but it's all about the idea of prepping and fitting what you need to do into some kind of list. And when you understand what it takes to sell to somebody, you know you're going to have to cover a certain number of objections. And if you're going into a market for the first time, just write down all the objections you're going to encounter. This may involve interviewing some people, finding out what the objections are by asking them, like you talked about the guy having the 15-minute calls, or just what you're doing here, asking for questions. Find out what's on people's minds. If you're not a person in this market, if you're either a freelancer or you're getting into a market where you're really not a fan of the market, you just decided it's something you wanted to get into, you better find out what's on the person's mind, what's on the typical buyer's mind. And what flipped him? What took him from being a semi-interested prospect to becoming a take out my wallet and give you money kind of customer? What objections were there? Is it too high price? Can I reuse this? Are you going to call me again? Are you going to send my name out? There's all kinds of things that people are worried about that are keeping them from making that final decision. And some of those objections are irrational. Some are very rational, make sense. Some are myths. You may be clearing up some bad ideas about the product, but each one is individual. So there is no master list to what's covering because I talk about having a headline. I like to use superscripts, which are like the headline has my top three benefits, so to speak. The superscript above that will have the fourth benefit. The subhead beneath that will kind of tidy up some of the housekeeping, bring it in the word, and you can see it free, or you can sample this without, you can sample this right now if you're one of the first 11 people, blah, blah, blah. Then my opening paragraph kind of re-sums up the top three stuff, get into it, then I get into the pitch, and I'm always thinking about what the reader is saying to himself to get out of reading this thing. Because he's looking for an out all the time. So I'm always thinking, What can I say now that's going to rehook him, that's going to keep him interested, you know? And so I keep coming back to him about how this is going to help him, how this is going to do this. And then I generally get to a point where I just say bullets. And if I only have 15 bullets, I'm going to use them all. Or if I have 6 bullets, if I have 152 bullets, which is a wealth of information, I have been known to use, you know, I have been known to write 8 pages of bullets, but I may not want to do that. I may want to core that down and just say there's so much more, you know, and have that as a use half the bullets as a backup letter, you know, to people that don't buy but are sitting on the fence. So, you know, I get to the point where there's bullets, and what the bullets do is they just, they tweak every single little hot button in his passionate little heart. And you want to make a list. You want to make a list of all the benefits to all the features, all the benefits that he hasn't thought about, all the answers to all the objections, all of that stuff. Make those out as bullets. Make a hierarchy of them, starting with the most important first. Don't hide the most important benefits and elements of your sales pitch, because you never know when he's going to stop reading. And I'll tell you something, Gary. I have written 4 or 5 pages worth of bullets before, and I know from experience that sometimes it's one bullet that makes a sale. So if that one bullet is going to be a common denominator in that market where it's going to flip 40 or 50% of these guys, I want that bullet to be number one.
Well, I noticed that basically your response to this question was, it's not about having a checklist of things that your letter's got to look like. It's a checklist of ways that you're going to harmonize with your customer.
Well, I would emphasize again, it's the sales pitch. It's the sales conversation you would have. And I like the word harmonize. That's true. Getting in tune with the person you're talking to. It's not about you. So many writers make the mistake of thinking, what I think about the product or what I like about it or what happened to me when I did the product, that's maybe a passing interest. Most of the time, it's of no interest at all. This is all about the reader. It's all about his wants, his needs, and what it's going to do for him. Get yourself out of it. You are merely the vehicle for taking the benefits that exist that he doesn't know about or isn't cognizant of or isn't quite understand, and you are the vehicle that you are making it manifest inside of his head so that they sit there. You know, one of the biggest thrills I get is when I hear about somebody who read a pitch of mine, put it down, and for some reason didn't order, and then woke up in the middle of the night cursing me because they had to get up and find that 800 number and call because they couldn't stop thinking about it.
That's good.
And that's, you know, so what you want really is the sale. You want the guy to order before he's finished reading, you know, to drop everything and go do that. Sometimes that can't happen. Maybe he's on the train home and he's not near a phone or whatever. Or he's online, but he hasn't got his credit card or whatever. But you want your pitch to get inside and rattle around and make him uncomfortable. Putting that buying decision in there is an act of discomfort for the prospect. You don't want him to be comfortable. You want him to be uncomfortable. And the only way to scratch that itch is to order. Find out what the fuss is all about.
What? Now, that's a great point. Okay, I want to talk about this for a second. This thing of making people uncomfortable, and there's another question that somehow this just popped in my head. Sunny asked this question about, what if I don't like to promote myself? And somehow I get this feeling like these two things are very related to each other.
They are.
Speak to that. Speak to this whole, you know, discomfort about promoting yourself or discomfort about making the other guy squirm.
It's a very common thing I come across with critique. People write from their heels. And what that means is that they're not, they are squirrely about just coming out and saying, you need this, you need to buy it, here's how to get it, here's how much it is. They can't say that. Well, you know what? That's what you need to do. If this becomes a psychotic episode in your life where you absolutely cannot ask somebody to buy, you need to get into a different business. This is what I talk about when I talk about waking up your inner salesman. Everybody has an inner salesman. 99% of the inner salesman in the population is just fast asleep, and most of the time he will never be woken up. If you're in this business, you need to wake the little bastard up and put him to work selling for you. this inner salesman, there's a lot of TV shows out there like Lost, you know, where people are suddenly thrust out of their lives into another situation. You know what the first thing that happens when you're hungry and you're on a deserted island and you're kind of desperate and you got to go into survival mode? What's the first thing that happens inside your head? Your inner salesman wakes up. And if there's only a little bit of food there, you're gonna find yourself negotiating for survival. And that's where, I'm not saying you need to go into that, but really, when I first started writing, I made a decision that turned out to be just the basis of everything I needed to do, and I call it gun to the head writing. I sat down I imagined a gun to my head that would go off if I didn't make this letter work. Now, that gun wasn't real. There wasn't a real loaded gun, but there was, metaphorically there was, because I only had enough, I started out with enough money for one more month's rent, and I could barely afford another tank of gas in the car, and I had to make those first pieces work. So when I sat down, using my meager skills and I was using a swipe file at the time, by the way. It was very, it was like tested advertising methods. I was swiping headlines from there like crazy. It's John Caples' book, written in the 40s, I believe, or the 50s. Anyway, when I sat down, I thought, if I don't make this work, then I got to go find another gig, because there's no safety net. There's no second chance here. That attitude I have kept my entire career, and that's the attitude you need, a gun to the head, that if you don't make this work, the gun's going to go off. So what would you use that word? Would you position your pitch this way? Would you be a wussy and not ask for the sale if a gun was to your head? And the answer almost always is no. You wouldn't, you wouldn't use this bad word. You'd try a stronger word. You wouldn't come across and go on some tangent and make some weird noises about maybe buying this if you want, or maybe not, I don't really care, or anything like that. No, you would come forward and say, you need this right now. Here's how you get it. Here's why this price is good. Here's everything you need to know to make the buying decision.
That's great. I think so many of us, and I've been slowly unlearning. Okay, I am not going to be squeamish about asking people for money. When I first started selling my marketing system to basically salespeople who, they need to generate sales leads and they need to get in to see a customer without beating the door down and cold calling and all this kind of stuff. And I knew how to do that. And I had to look in the mirror and get straight with myself that, look, Perry, if you don't get their money and if they don't get their product, they're going to stay on the same road they're on, and that road is misery for them. Like, I had to get straight in my head that what I'm doing is good, and it's worth their money, and if they do what I tell them to do, it's worth 10 or 100 times more than what they're paying me, and I shouldn't feel at all squeamish about that. And I got over it, but I had that feeling for a long time.
It's all about being the go-to guy. If you really have a good product, if what you offer really will help the person, the prospect you're going to, and if it's so unusual that if they don't get this product, they probably will not solve the problem they have, or they will wind up with something inferior, then it's your job to stand up and say, I know what's going on. I'm the guy you should be dealing with. Come to me. Get this. Do it right now. I mean, it's shame on you because you're such a weaselly writer that you don't get the point across that there's no alternative to this, that this is the best option out there, that you're going to take care of them, that there's no risk at all, that all they got to do is try this. If you don't get this point across using the best salesmanship tactics you can use, then shame on you. That's your job. That's your only job, is to get that point across.
Oh, that's great.
That's why you gotta wake up the inner salesman and get him put that bad boy to work.
I had a couple of really interesting questions about refunds. I'm just gonna I'll go through both of them and you can respond. says, John is 150% behind money-back guarantees, so is Barry and 1,000 other guys. How does this work with fiction ebooks and text adventure games? I'm definitely afraid I'll sell 9,000 copies and issue 8,990 refunds, and then those 8,990 people still have one of my titles for free. In the industries I'm involved in, books and software, the combination of the two, refunds on purchase titles don't happen, not even with a note from God. So I could be a maverick, shop the industry, do the exact opposite, have a bunch of controversy, shed some light. I think this is a pivot point to me closing truckloads of more sales. I need serious convincing. Well, let's start with that one. What do you think about that?
So this guy is in a market where he thinks if he makes a generous guarantee that too many people are going to take him up on.
Yeah, he thinks like 99% of them will.
Well, my first question is, why does he think that? Now, here's the thing with guarantees. A lot of rookie, first of all, no one experienced in direct response sales questions the value of a guarantee. So rookies come in and they get all nervous about offering a guarantee. When I say rookies, I'm sometimes talking about guys who have been in business for 50 years. They just never done direct response, okay? Maybe the retail or the joint thing. And what a guarantee does, nobody, in my experience, you have to live with about a 7% guarantee rate, a 7% return rate. About 7% of any market, and this is not an exact thing, but this pretty much rounds out. If somebody calls me and says, I got a 7% return rate, how do I get it lower? My answer is, you're not. You're just not. You know, there's just enough people out there that feel squirrely after ordering that they're not going to do it. If you have a 14 to 20% in some markets, that's average. When you're talking about some of the diet markets and things, it's just you have to learn to live with a high return rate. However, if you've got a 20% return rate and you know that the competition is operating on a 7% or even lower, there are ways around it. One of the ways to do it is a stick letter, which I'm sure you've talked about, Perry. I know you've used it before. And that's just reinforcing the buying decision in the prospect's mind. Sometimes a stick letter arrives before the product and tells them, hey, you know, I'm really glad you ordered. You just made the best decision of your life. And, you know, because you were such a good guy and did this, here, I'm sending you something free I didn't even talk about. And you don't make another sale, you give them some free information. When the product arrives, and this is something that a lot of people don't understand, when you write a great direct response sales pitch and the person buys and they get the thing, often, And I don't understand how this works. I don't question it, though. Often, they won't crack the seal on the package. They'll put it up on their shelf, and they won't get to it. Why is this? Because when you do the sales pitch, you get into their passionate sweet spot, and you generate the excitement needed for them to make the buy. Time passes. Even if they're downloaded an ebook, some time passes. And they get the ebook and they put it in a file. They say, well, I'll get to that later. They get to that. Well, the passion starts to fade. That's why in direct response, you got to make that sale while he's got the letter in his hand or the email up on his screen. If you let him get away, even if he swears to you he's going to come back later, a good salesman knows that very few of the people are going to come back and make a buy because, again, buying is an irrational decision. So as far as the guarantees go, if you have a high guarantee rate, only a couple of things are happening. One, you just got a shitty product, and shame on you for doing that, and you deserve your high return rate. If you have a good product, though, and you're still getting high return, then it might be a pricing problem. And you have to make sure that the product has value equal to the price you're charging. Now, this doesn't mean when you're selling information, you know, how do you put a price on information, for example? Or what was this guy selling, games? I mean, how do you do that? And most people are used to paying $19.95 for a game for their Xbox, or actually $39.95. Then if they're charging less than or charging more than the industry average, you have to have a reason why. This is why we use reason why copy. We give them a reason why it's cheaper, why it's more expensive, or why it is the price it is. And all you got to do is give them a reason why, because everybody understands in the sales letters, you give them reasons why they want the product. But they want to get, when it comes down to the close, you got to give them a reason why they're paying what they're paying. And when you do that right, then in their head, they never question, or they can answer the wife or their partner or anybody who questions them that says, why did you pay $100 for this? You can get a Xbox game for $39. And the guy says, well, because it's blank. You know, what have you armed him with to say that makes this all worthwhile? So the person who's doing the question, he says, oh, that makes sense. Okay, very good. Now, as far as being scared about guarantees, if he thinks he's going to get 99% guarantees, then he's in a market I've never heard of where people are trying, excuse me, that's another phone line. People are actually going to the trouble of reading a sales letter. Think about this process, guys. Reading a sales letter, taking out their wallet, ordering something, waiting for it to come or downloading it or whatever the process is, knowing that they're going to keep part of it and send the rest of it back and do all this and get their money back and do that. Yeah, there's probably a few people out there that maybe think that way. That's why you may never get below a 7% return rate. But you're never going to have a huge market full of people who are going to go to that trouble just to screw you out of one little freebie thing that they get to keep, you know, and do this. The Rodale, the biggest mailer in the country, I think, still, and they do book things. They have one offer. They never change, and they don't let the writers change it. You can't pay for the book. You can only order it free. So if you read one of the pitches and you decide you want this book on gardening or financial advice or whatever it is, you can only order it free for 30 days. At the end of 30 days, you can send it back and pay nothing. If you want it, just keep it. You will be billed, and you can pay the bill. Even if you decide 5 years later, however, that you made a mistake and you don't want the product for whatever reason, you can send it back then and get a refund. So you can look at it free. If you decide you don't want it, all you got to do is send it back, and they even provide the postage for sending it back. And even if you do pay for it, later you can change your mind. This is the biggest mailer in the country. They go to every single list available. They mail every name they can get their hands on, so they cover almost every market and every person. Sorry, the dogs are barking at the... One of the advantages of working at home is you get to work at home. One of the disadvantages of working at home is that you have to work at home.
Yeah, I understand. I had a five-year-old giving me pictures while I was talking here, so...
Well, anyway, that kind of answers the question. First of all, it's an irrational fear. Second of all, and this is something I wanted to say, this guy is asking a question. He says, he started out saying, I know that you and John and everybody else talks about guarantees and stuff, but I'm in a market that, and as soon as I hear that, my eyes just glaze over. There ain't nothing different about your market. It's like you're saying, hey, I know that every guy who's ever, you know, asked for the hand of a woman in marriage, you know, did these things or did something like this, but my girlfriend's different. You know, no, she's not. Stop. I got a quote. So that answers that, unless you think I missed some part of that.
No, I think that's good. Well, I think you should just try it for a week at least, you know. And I also thought it was interesting that that with Rodale, they're not even getting the guy's credit card first. They're billing him.
That's right.
Wow. I mean, it's not like they have to pay the bill. Are they going to get reported to a credit agency or something if they don't pay for their book?
You know, I remember asking them about that, what kind of thing they do. And basically, you know, you go through, I guess they have collection things, you know, where they mail them. But basically, it's a bottom line game. They know they're going to get a certain number of people who are going to keep the book and never send it back.
Yep.
And the answer to that is, so what? You know, they know that if they get a book that works, they know what their numbers have to be able to cover all exigencies. You know, it's like when you mail out letters. You know a certain number of letters are not going to get delivered. They're not going to get, They're not going to, you know, they're just not going to make it into the person's mailbox. You know, there's going to be losses involved. I hate to use this analogy, but it's like the invasion of Normandy in World War II. Eisenhower knew that landing in Normandy was going to include, what was it, 50% casualty rate?
Yeah, something like that.
How do you make a decision like that? You know, and the reason he did is that he literally had a gun to his head. There was, you know, that was a decision he had to make to save Europe, to get in there. And it was not something that he would make in a normal situation. It was an abnormal situation, or it was a situation he had, I guess. He didn't have another option. He didn't have the option of waiting or doing something different or trying something different. That's what they agreed on. That's what they knew they had to do. The time was right. They had to go in. They just knew that it was a, you know, they were going to have to live with that.
Yeah, it was 50% now or more later. So,
right.
Right?
Yeah, that's the same decision that went into the bomb in Hiroshima. And I guess we're going off on a tangent. Better left not explored. So.
Well, your point is taken. Okay, here's another one. He says, what's the magic formula to web marketing? Okay, killer copy on the site, then they opt in. According to AWeber's page, it takes at least 7 messages before people buy. How many opt-in emails do you send? 1 killer piece, 9 small but powerful bullets. How do you stagger it, a multi-piece email campaign?
Good grief. You probably answer this better than I can. I mean, the answer is basically, what does it take for your market? And the idea of you need to say, you know, whatever AWeber is saying is including every Yahoo out there sending out emails. So if you need 7 emails to make a sale, then you're either dealing with an extremely dense or uninterested market, or you're not selling very well. So generally, this is where Dan Kennedy and I kind of part ways, in that he, now I'm not saying he's wrong. He, you know, Dan does this to a degree of success that is staggering, but he likes to do the multi-layered advertising thing where you get hit with 7 or 14 letters, you know, and they keep their, like, slight variations to do that. I don't like to do that, and I come from the other school, and it's merely because I'm so damn lazy. I don't want to write 7 letters or 14 letters. I want to write 1 killer letter that can be mailed over and over and over again. Now, here's a secret that a lot of people don't understand. When you have a sales letter that goes out that gets a 20% response, or, you know, brings in X number of dollars, remail it again in 3 weeks, and you're going to get X divided by 2. You're going to get half of that. And if you've got a big hit on your hand, then you're an idiot for not mailing it. And the formula is keep mailing it until it gets down to about break even, because half a break even is a losing thing. Now, is this exact? No, it's not exact, but it's the way smart direct response marketers work. So you don't need different letters. Now, you can change the letter a little bit by saying on the envelope, last chance, or, you know, second notice, you know, in red on the top of the letter, or, you know, or have a little cover note. I sent you this before. I didn't know if you got it. I thought you might want to know about this because it's such a great deal, blah, 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 things like that. But you don't need to change the pitch.
Well, I'll weigh in on this from really a different angle, and I'll refer to Ben Savinga's seminar, where what Ben Savinga's formula is all about is including with the advertising lots and lots of good content that makes it valuable in and of itself, right? The Magalog approach and that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and they are not writing multiple Magalogs, I can guarantee you that.
Well, right, but what the email version of this is, and this is how I do it, is I have 1 sales letter on my website for 1 particular product, and somebody opts in, they start getting a whole bunch of autoresponder messages. And all those different autoresponder messages are basically little pieces of Gary's Magalog, if you will.
Huh.
Right? Where, let me tell you how to do this. Let me tell you how to do this. Let me tell you how to do this. And they might get 10 of those or 20 or whatever, uh-huh. And I'll just take content and I'll keep spoon-feeding little bits of it. But at the end of every single email is a link back to that original sales letter. So I don't just hit them once. They, you know, I build a relationship with them over time. And what I found is that sometimes I never actually got them to buy the thing that I was originally trying to sell them, but they did buy something else. There's probably people in this coaching program, they never actually bought my book that I was trying to sell in the first place, but they bought the coaching. But the reason they trusted me was because, like Gary's formula, I proved that I was trustworthy and reliable by giving them some good content. You are doing that in a different way with your blog.
Right. Actually, what I do with my blog is reverse the sales process. Rather than me going out, I have something where people come in, and it works very, very well. But it's all dependent on personality and content. That's a whole other section to talk about.
Right. And that's what I think autoresponders mostly should be. They shouldn't be hammering sales pitches. You can have the hammering sales pitch on your website, but I think those autoresponder messages need to be good content. One guy that might be on this call is Glenn Livingston, and he's got this guinea pig site, guineapigsecrets.com, and if you opt into his site, you get like 68 autoresponders over the next year or some ungodly thing. And basically what Glenn has done with that is, nobody in their right mind would ever try to go up against them and write that much good content for free. It makes him king of that market. And he's selling a lot of books.
You know, that's a secret that the guy who's worried about return is still needs to learn, too.
Yeah.
A lot of people get very, very jealous about the information they have. They say, well, I'm not going to tell you that. You know, you got to pay for it, blah, blah, blah. And what I've discovered back when I was still selling my copywriting services is that if I got in front of a guy or on a call with a guy or was at a seminar talking with someone, that I could give away everything I knew. I didn't have to hold back. At first, I thought I needed to hold back. I would say, well, I can't say that. You need to pay me to find out how to do that. I found out that it was much easier for me to not hold back, to not be coy, to not play any games, and just lay it all out there. That's why I'm doing this on this call. I'm not holding anything back.
And that's right.
What happens is that people, you know, if they're going to come to me, they're going to come to me anyway and buy my product or whatever. But, you know, I'm really out there to teach, and I, you know, that's where I get my jollies. It's a pleasant side fact that I also, you know, can make some money doing this, too. But that's a pleasant side fact. My whole career has been getting to the point where I am independent enough and free enough to be able to teach, because that's where I'm really, really happy doing that. Now, the thing that I couldn't predict was going to happen, but that has happened, is that by giving everything away, by giving away content, by letting everything out, essentially just saying everything, I still sell this stuff. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, that's really great, but I can go through all your blogs, and I can go through all your free newsletters and find transcripts of your talks and seminars and all that stuff, or I can just buy your course where it's all laid out very, very simply and get all this stuff. But they're not guessing at that point. They're not saying, well, I guess maybe you kind of know what you're talking about. No, they are absolutely convinced. So if they're looking for somebody who knows what they're talking about, you know, that's how you establish yourself as the go-to guy in a market. If you are absolutely fearless about giving out everything you know about doing this stuff, even if, you know, you will sell stuff even if what you sell is a replication of what you've been given away for free. It doesn't seem like it should be that way. In most markets, especially information markets, it is. Because you know what? When you sign up with me, you get the newsletter too. You know, and the newsletter is constantly refreshing the stuff and keeping it up to date and going. And there's a lot more to be said than what I can give away free in an hour or even a 3-hour call like this. You know, there's never enough. A 3-hour call translates to a couple of chapters. You know,
right. Well, I'll just add one more little tidbit before we go into the next thing, which is this whole autoresponder thing is also a stick strategy, because what I do with my products is I assume, and it's also true with a white paper or free report or anything, I assume they came, they bought it, they intended to read it, the phone rang, they never got back to it, so now I'm just going to take the very, very best parts of every chapter, the really juicy stuff, and I'm going to send it to them in email day 2, day 4, day 6, day 10, and so that if they never crack the book, they'll still get the most important stuff in their email, and they'll go, gee, I like this guy. Gee, I would be a real schmuck if I sent this back. And it suppresses refunds, and it makes happier customers. Matter of fact, I had a guy come up to me at a seminar 6 months ago, and he goes, Perry, I bought your definitive guide to Google AdWords, and something happened that never happened to me before. I start getting this little trickle of helpful emails to explain all this stuff to me and make it really simple so that it was like you were trying to make sure that I did my Google stuff right and I didn't give Google any more money than I had to. And he goes, I really appreciated that. Actually, this was Alan Bechtold that told me that. You know Alan, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Alan's like a pro in the business. He's been around the block for 20 years, but he had never had that experience, and I really appreciated that. And, of course, well, the important thing is he did too. And so it is a refund strategy, refund suppression strategy is, hey, just keep giving them some value.
Well, you know what the trick is to being a guru or a teacher, if that's what you want to do? The trick is very simple. I mean, I naturally care about people, and I was helping other writers for years. They call me up, they were stuck, and they needed something. I just walk them through what they needed to do. And these are my peers. And they called me, and they knew that I wouldn't tell anybody, that they could get the real deal, that it was just that. And I didn't get anything out of it except a heartfelt thanks and, you know, maybe a favor in the little piggy bank. But I almost never call in my favors. And so when I went out teaching, I just applied that same thing. I knew I was getting something out of that, and I liked doing it. The fact that I get money for it just makes it more. It makes it real for me. And the fact that I can get paid for being a teacher means that I can continue being a teacher. So I don't just do it for the guys who are in my little inside circle. Instead, I can offer something like the Insiders Club and go to other people and offer them advice. And the key is to really care. It's just, you know, if you're the kind of guy who doesn't care about other people, who doesn't like other people, if you're a real curmudgeon and you really aren't invested, that's not the gig for you. You know, you'll find something else to do. There's lots of things out there to sell and to do things. And there's, you know, most people are not like that. But if you are the kind of guy, that caring will come through. You can't fake it. So for me, I'm not crafting some personality in my blog or my newsletters or anything like that. That's me. That's the easiest writing there is. It's like writing in my diary, you know. I just made the decision, you know, I'm letting these people into my life. I'm going to tell it like it is, and I'm going to treat them, really critiques and stuff, the way I treat myself. It's the easiest thing in the world. Now, it's still great information. It's stuff you can't get anywhere else. It's stuff you really can't get anywhere else because it's coming from me. Nobody can replicate that. I am unreplicatable, except for the fact that people knock off my news, my letters and answers. But when it gets right down to it, what the secret thing is me. That's what I bring this. That's what you bring to this as a coach, and it's you. That's one of the hardest things about this is, you know, trying to clone somebody to take over. You know, I wish I had somebody that could write my newsletter every couple of months. You can't do it, you know. So there's a little bit of that, but it's a sweet shackle. It's not an onerous thing. It's just something that, you know, the small commitment that I've made to writing a monthly newsletter, to doing critiques, doing things like that, it's a pleasant thing. It's something I really enjoy and I really like, and I think that comes through. And like I say, it's easy because I'm not hiding, I'm not faking it, I'm not doing anything. And if you can find a niche for yourself, and that includes everybody here on the call, where you can be yourself, then that is marketing nirvana, because it's all going to come through. And all you need then is a market big enough to, you know, to fund you in the way you need to be funded.
I hope everybody... This is probably one of the most important things that you've said. I hope everybody actually goes, when you send out the MP3s or whatever, I hope they go back and listen to this part. Because especially if you're in the information business, but even still to a lesser degree, if you're selling a physical product, that this really is, more than anything else, this is about you being you. It's about you just sort of getting comfortable with taking the stuff that is so normal to you, that's your thoughts and your personality and your approach to things, and laying it out on the table and letting people participate in it. That is what people are really buying, as much as they're buying whatever you think it is they bought. And in the case of John, You know, John's got all these tricks, all these techniques, all these stories, all of these copywriting methods and everything, but the thing that enables John's students to learn from him effectively is they get to know John, they come to appreciate his idiosyncrasies, they like hearing that same old one-legged golf story for the 14th time because it's a great story and because it's John. They bond with John, and now they have learned how to learn from John, and they keep renewing every year, and they keep, and that's the business that John's in. So John's in the business of waking up, putting on his sweatpants or whatever you wear. For all I know, you walk around the house naked, but you know, it's like
tutu in a clown outfit.
Is that you wake up every day and you say, I get to be me today, and one of the things that me does is me helps other people be them.
Yep, that's a good way to put it. I had a thought there, and it just evaporated. What are we on, like almost 2 hours on the go? Okay, let's move on.
Okay, one guy, this is a great question. It was, he says, I sell retail aftermarket ATV parts and accessories. Most of my product descriptions come straight from the manufacturers. How do you tackle copywriting for retail markets like this? The copywriting model format I see used for info products or one product sites doesn't seem to fit. Thank you for your consideration. That's from Travis Smith.
That's all-terrain vehicles he's talking about?
I believe, yeah. All-terrain, yeah. So, yeah, he's selling handlebars, or he's selling mag wheels or exhaust pipes or something, I think. So,
it's just not true. I only have a few clients. One of my clients is was the golf guys who are branching out into musical instruments and stuff and training. And I'm about to write an ad just for bass players with a training video about these guys. And they've also sold actual clubs, the physical elements of playing golf or playing music as opposed to the informational side of it.
So like musical instrument stuff and accessories and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Actual. And I... stuff that could be sold by retail. And I don't change the what I do at all. I don't change the way I write at all. What you are here's a good lesson to learn. What you are selling is not the product. What you think is your product is not your product. Your product is what your product does for the buyer. So in other words, a lot of people fall in love with the fact that they're selling a seminar. They put it in the headline, by God, it's a seminar, come on out. Well, nobody wants to go to a seminar. And a seminar is not something that's exciting. You have chosen the seminar as the vehicle of bringing the benefits, of making the benefits manifest to the person who's going to come to the seminar. You could have chosen to make it a series of videotapes or an e-book or something like that. You just happen to choose the vehicle of the seminar. So you're not selling a seminar. You're selling what that seminar does for the person. It's the same in retail. You're not selling skis. You're selling what the skis do for the skier who buys them. So once you understand that, then you understand that basic salesmanship is all about hitting that irrational sweet spot deep inside of them about what they want. It's like cars. I keep coming back to cars because basically if what you want is transportation, then there's no reason to buy a Porsche, or there's no reason to buy a high-end Toyota or a Lexus or anything like that, because the low-end Korean cars, will have everything you want. They'll have air conditioning, and they'll have really comfy seats, and they'll have high crash ratings, and they have all this stuff, and you can get them for $18,000. Why in the world would you spend twice that much? Well, when you start to answer that question, why in the world does someone spend twice as much to get, what do they get in the car when basically they're just sitting in the car and going down the street, going from point A to point B, then you start to understand the psychology of a customer. And when you're selling ATV things, you're not selling the You're not selling the vehicle. You're not selling the pipes or the nails and stuff. You're selling what those things do for the guy. So it all comes down to benefits. You've got to have a better list of benefits than the competition has. That's pretty much it.
Well, so you could conceivably, you could write a, if not a six-page sales letter, maybe a two-page sales letter about these handlebars or something, right?
Oh, yeah.
Could you compare that to, say, what if he went and looked at the Sharper Image catalog? Or could you talk about other slightly different approaches? I mean, I think the Sharper Image is more similar than different to you. That's my opinion. Could you speak to that?
In fact, the most recent Sharper Image, I'm a big fan of Sharper Image, and is it Jerry? Or what's his name? Thalheimer?
Richard Thalheimer.
Yeah, Richard. I'm a big fan of him. And, of course, he was following in the footsteps of none other than Joe Sugarman, who was one of the first to do those long copy ads on one product.
Right.
He started selling, was it ion generators, I think, or something like that. Anyway, you know, when I first met Joe, I was at a seminar, and he goes, hi, Jonathan, are you? I said, Joe, listen, I bought one of your ion generators back in 1978. And he goes, yeah. I said, yeah, and it doesn't work, and I want to know what you're going to do about it. That's my little joke about it. Great guy, just a genius. But anyway, the most recent Sharper Image catalog I saw went back to one-page ads per product. And I don't know if he was experimenting or if he had gotten out of the thing, because they were starting to put 5, 6, you know, 17 products on a page, and so they can only say a paragraph about it, you know, or something like that. Often when I do, and just I may be going off on a tangent, so you may have to correct me here, Perry, but when you deal with catalog copy with that, if a client comes to me and he's got a catalog, I have learned that I can go to him and I go, you have 175 products. And he goes, yes. I go, what? Top, I'll bet you have 3 or 6 that are paying for the entire catalog. And he will pause and he'll say, yeah. And I'll say, I'll bet you have 1 or 2 that really is your top seller by a huge amount. He'll say, yeah, it's one product. And I say, then why do you have these other 170 products in there? Why aren't you sending out a letter for just that one product? Or why aren't you sending out something for just those top 2 products? Bring all this other crap in as a back end or something. And for those that change that paradigm, they are able to sell massive amounts of stuff, much more stuff, because they can target. Because then they can write, instead of sending out a 36-page catalog for 175 products, they send out one, you know, 4 or 8-page letter on one product. And then they bring people in, and then they're off to the races because they're dealing with former buyers as opposed to cold prospects. However, most people can't do that because in their mind, they're cataloging. So their mind is a catalog. How do you have a catalog with one product? You don't. Well, what Joe Sugarman did and what Thalheimer did is the catalog became a collection of one-page ads on single products, or about that, maybe half a page, something like that. They were able to go to town. Now, when the writing's good, it's not breezy, writing. It's dead solid, right on, direct response, hardcore, get to the sweet spot of the person and do it. You know, is it SkyMall? You know, I'm sure everybody here flies, and you get SkyMall catalog in the seat pocket in front of you on the airplane.
Yep.
You know, they just collect catalogs, and they say, you know, you get 2 pages in SkyMall. So these people that have these big catalogs, Eddie Bauer, everybody else, they only get to pick a couple of pages. So they're not picking the dog. They're picking the best stuff. And often they will go off, like, the ones that sell the best are the foreign language ones and things like that. And those are, like, 4 pages long. Was it Alex? Or what's that? Learn a foreign language or something? No, it's the sales that learn how to sell something. I don't know. It's like a 4-page insert, those things. It's one product. And then you look at the other catalogs there, and there's, you know, 15. They try to cram as many products under the one page, you know, thinking they're going to do that. If they just look at the numbers, they're going to see that only 1 or 2 of those products are carrying the whole page, if at all, if they're selling anything. So the more, you know, it's, you know, again, I don't write long copy because I like long copy. I would love to wake up one day and have the universe change so that I can write 3 paragraphs of cute, clever stuff and it'll sell. That ain't the way it works. I write long copy because that's what it takes to get the sales pitch down, and you need to have a complete sales pitch down in order to make a sale in most cases.
What do you think about Jay Peterman? And we probably might need to explain what that is for some people.
From Seinfeld. No, from the Jay Peterman catalog, which is he goes off on another tangent. He kind of likes to create luscious landscapes of fiction, you know, around things, you know, and, you know, imagine yourself on a beach in Bali and things like that. So this is what I was going to bring up before that I forgot. You said that I train people to expect to have a letter from John in their inbox when they get something from John. So it's, you know, what you see is what you get. You will train your list to respond to how you bring them in. My best example of that is the Dr. O'Leary golf letters. Dr. O'Leary is this wacky guy who loves to golf, but he has a wife who doesn't let... This is a real guy. I didn't make this stuff up, but I made it manifest. It's my voice, but it's really... It's his life channeled through my head, so it's not fiction, but it is a little bigger than life. But this is a real guy, Dr. O'Leary, who talks... And a golf guy, even when he knows that a letter sitting in the mailbox that he's got is from Dr. O'Leary, even though he knows he's going to get pitched on a product, he opens it anyway. We get amazingly high readership on this because what the prospect, what the guy getting the letter is saying, because he's already bought something and he's on the main mailing list, he's not saying, oh, yuck, another bothersome thing from that O'Leary guy. He's saying, hey, a letter from O'Leary. I wonder what that nutcase has to say today. I wonder what weird story he's going to tell. And you get this, and you get to share your passion about golfing with Dr. O'Leary for a few minutes while you're reading the letter and talking about it. Maybe you want the product, and maybe you don't. And you know, you just don't care because you get to indulge a little bit. And that's what you can do with your market too. No matter who you are, once you have a list that's going an opt-in market or whatever, you train them to crave what you're writing, to understand it. It can be merely that you're providing content so that when they get an email from you, they jump right on it. Oh, my God, last time I opened an email with him, he told me how to do blank, and that, you know, doubled my response or whatever. Or maybe it's just, hey, I wonder what that guy's got to say today. You know, I like that guy, and he never bothers me. He never, you know, he's always got something to say. It's really, really easy reading. You know, my newsletters get high readership, too, apparently, because people... I can't tell you how many people come up to me, top marketers, and they say, yours is the only newsletter I read. And that's the biggest compliment I can get, because I know that they have 15 newsletters that they're comped on, they're getting, or they're paying for, they're getting all the top newsletters. And all I've ever wanted is a chance to get into people's head and have that conversation. You know, I'd write the thing anyway, but it's really gratifying to know that people are listening to me at the same time. And by the way, I don't sell in my newsletters. It's all content.
Yes.
If I do sell, I'll add another letter in the package that goes out. It says, and Alvin, I'll just tell them, I'm pitching you here. You know, and they know the newsletter's here, so I don't get an, oh, yuck, here's another pitch from Carlton.
Right.
It's rather, I wonder what he's got to say today. Oh, this newsletter. Oh, look, he's got something else going on here. So,
you bet.
You don't get that, oh, yuck, reaction.
Right. Well, it's all about content. Here's a question from Mark Ingalls. He says, it seems like most of the copywriting samples are for information products like videos or ebooks. Most of your advice about bullets is to make them blind, but that doesn't work for a tangible product. Besides listing features and turning them into benefits, do you have any suggestions for making killer bullets?
That's just silly, Barry. That's, you know, you can't do blind bullets. Of course you can do a blind bullet. A blind bullet is merely alluding to the feature with a tangible benefit and not telling them what the feature is. You got to get the product to understand what the feature is. Now, if you're selling a nail, you know, how many parts of the nail are there? There's the head, the shaft, and the point, I imagine, and then the steel factor or something. So, you know, the features would be it's got a... You can hit it with a block of cement or something that won't bend or something. I don't know, whatever the benefits of the thing are, but you got to make them manifest in the person's head. You got to understand why people are buying nails and what it is about nails that they want, what it is about nails they don't like from other nails, and what positions you uniquely in the prospect's mind in order to sell this stuff.
Well, now you have this sort of... I don't know, it's like a three-part formula that you use in your bullets a lot.
Actually, it's I call it the two-fisted approach, and it's called the 1-2 punch, actually.
Okay.
I guess I do it with non-teaser, but, you know, most of my bullets are teased. They're blind. I'll tell you what the benefit is, but you've got to get the product to find out what it is that gives you that benefit. I want to create, and that's creating the itch. That's the teasing, the blindness of the bullet creates the itch where they have to get the product to find out what's going on. I will also use bullets where I give away information. You know, 5 ways to do this, and then in parentheses, number 2. You know, you're going to wash your socks every day so you don't get athlete's foot when you're touring Europe. Number 4, you know, and you're going to blah, 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 and actually give them tips, skipping number 3, number 1, and number 5. Okay? So when you're giving the 1-2 punch of writing a bullet, most people do a 1-punch bullet. They'll say, why having this product lets you blank, you know, essentially. And that's pretty much your standard bullet. Or, you know, how to blank when, you know, or just how to blank, you know, if it's an information product. If it's a real product like nails,
let's say it's made out of some special steel alloy and it doesn't break off.
So when I talk about the 1-2 punch, I talk about delivering a good benefit. But then I always come up with a alternative benefit, even an incongruous benefit. Like if I'm talking, like I might try to bring in sex in the nail. I mean, I may play with it. I may not do it, but I'll try to do it. I'll say, not only are these nails the most effective things you are, .. but they're just gorgeous little things that, you know, you've never seen a sexy nail before until you've held one of these puppies in your hand. You know? And that's an example of a 1-2 punch. You come at them with a benefit, well, they're kind of expecting, but then you come at them from out of left field with another tangible benefit that they might smile when they read it, but they're not going to disagree with you.
Well, you know, sometimes that is what nudges people over the edge. They're like, well, I have these 15 different kinds of nails, and these ones have the slender, sexy, phallic machining on them or something.
that's absolutely true. Or you can bring in the whole thing of, if I was doing nails, I might bring in something that nobody else doing nails would talk about, which is what your coworkers think about you, you know? You know, hey, you know the beauty about being able to hit this thing sideways and still have it going straight? You're going to be ahead of everybody else, and you're going to be the go-to guy, you know, when it comes to building stuff. So you're going to get called before everybody else. You're going to rise to the top of the list on the union, and your buddies are going to hate you because you're going to be known as the nail guy. And that's a benefit that nobody else would think about or bring in or do anything, and that's part of the 1-2 punch. Bring in something from left field that nevertheless is relevant that you wouldn't have thought of otherwise. I think that answers the question.
Yes, it does. It does. Okay, I got another one. Let's talk about women. Hi, John. I'm selling a women's cosmetic product. It's a unique Hawaiian facial oil created out of 100 natural oils, reduces liver spots, clears up crow's feet, and wrinkles naturally. My target is baby boomer women, elderly women and men, women smokers, because smoking ages skin quicker. Can you give me some tips on how to think like my target market so I can write sales copy for them? And basically, he's asking a bunch of questions here. This is Welton Nakota. He's asking a bunch of questions about.
Are you sure this is a guy?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know the guy. So it's a man. He's got to write to women. He's got to sell this special cosmetic product, and he's wondering, okay, how are women different? And
okay, for rookies, it's generally, don't try to get fancy. Women are not all that much different than men when it comes down to buying stuff. In the advanced version, it's night and day. Women have to be approached in an entirely different way. So for a rookie, just try to get your basic sales pitch down. Say what you got, you know, why it's good, what's going on. When you're really going to get into world-class writing, you're going to start to understand the psychology that goes on. And women are a different breed than men. men make a huge mistake when they write to women. To really, really overgeneralize, men tend to focus on the features of a product, the heft, the weight, the size, the way it feels, all this physical stuff. Women tend to focus on the benefit side of it. Sometimes with rookie women copywriters, you are immersed in a warm bath of emotion of reading about this, but you can't tell what the product is. You don't have any idea what the physical dimensions of the product are. And with men, they won't tell you any of the benefits. So, watching the...